Welcome back to Greeks of the Globe. I'm your host, Andrea Nicola. Back in September, I spoke to Angeliki, a Greek South African, during what was the beginning of what we now call the second wave of the coronavirus pandemic. We spoke to Angeliki about growing up in South Africa, why a lot of the youth decide to leave the country, and what traveling to Greece was like in the middle of a pandemic. I found this quite bizarre coming from a country such as Australia, where international travel has been suspended since March 2020. So welcome to our show. Thank you for joining us. I think we should start off with you introducing yourself to the audience, telling us what your name and where you're from.
Sure. So my name is Angeliki Vianos, very Greek name. Originally from South Africa, so I grew up in Cape Town, South Africa, spent my whole life there, studied there, and then the year I finished studying, I graduated in December and decided to pack up my bags and move to London in January. So I've been in London since January 2018, working in London and planning on spending the next few years there, I guess.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you end up in the UK?
So I think, to be honest, you know, growing up in Cape Town is an extremely small city, very sort of close-knit, especially being a part of the Greek community. You know, everybody knows everyone. So it kind of felt like I needed a bit of a change. As much as I loved growing up in Cape Town, I don't think I would have changed it for anything. I think it's one of the most beautiful places to have grown up in and extremely lucky to have been part of, you know, a Greek community away from Greece. And I think Cape Town had that sort of a lot more close-knit than some of the other cities in South Africa. So I think we were quite lucky in that sense. But like I said, it was quite small and I think I needed a bit of a change. But from a career perspective as well, I really needed, you know, something that was going to be a little bit more global. And I felt that South Africa wasn't quite at that level yet, especially when it comes to marketing. So I studied marketing. I wanted to work in marketing. And I just knew that South Africa was sort of always a bit behind. You know, we always kind of follow Europe's trends, but we're always a couple of steps behind. So I wanted to be working in a space where we were sort of on top of things and, you know, working with the latest trends. And I knew I wasn't going to get that in South Africa. So decided to move to London. And funnily enough, a lot of, you know, Greek South Africans had actually moved over to London too. So it was kind of a natural progression. I felt like I was, you know, just the next person hopping on a plane. And that was made quite obvious to me when I arrived in London. And I think the first night I went out, I was surrounded by, I would say, close to 30 Greek South Africans who had all moved over in the last couple of years, all sort of seeking the same type of thing as I was. Just a bit of change, a new, you know, new environment, career opportunities. So yeah, there was definitely a big movement. And I think that's definitely made living in London quite a lot easier. Just the familiarity of Greek South African faces.
Does that just become the norm? Everyone grows up and moves to London. Do you even feel like you're in London? Do you all live on the same side of town?
We actually do, funnily enough. It's literally called like South African town. I think it, you know, it never used to be the norm. If I look at my aunts and my uncles, it never used to be the norm. They're all still in South Africa, grew up there, work there, had their families there. But I think recently the situation in South Africa from an economic perspective, from a crime perspective, just, you know, really hasn't helped the country at all. And, you know, kind of due to everything that's going on from a black-white movement perspective, the career opportunities in South Africa were very limiting for white people, which understandably, you know, they need to uplift the other communities. But from our side, it was kind of like, well, we've got the passport, we've got the opportunity to, you know, advance our careers in another country. Why not? And I think that's why there's a large movement of Greek South Africans, not necessarily South Africans in general. We're all sort of taking advantage of the passports and getting ourselves out of South Africa in time for, you know, what we see as South Africa kind of falling down. This is quite a harsh statement to say, and it's sad because, you know, we all love South Africa. But I think that's why there's been such a large movement of specifically Greek South Africans in the last couple of years.
For someone that's not from South Africa, like myself, what do you mean by South Africa falling down?
I think it's quite obvious to a lot of people that since the apartheid era, things in South Africa have never been really stable. And I think, you know, as much as we try and rebuild the country, it's extremely difficult. The stuff that happened during those times was extremely damaging to not only to the country, but to the people itself, whether they, you know, were involved at the time or not involved. I think the people that were not necessarily born during that time or, you know, around to experience it are still suffering the consequences of it. And that's, you know, due to jobs, due to poverty, there's various different factors. And unfortunately, it's taking a lot longer than you would hope for the country to rebuild. So there's a lot of corruption, there's a lot of crime due to extreme levels of poverty. And when you are sort of living in the more upper class bracket, you're kind of seen as the, you know, the hater. Everybody's not happy with you because you're obviously living a more pleasant life than what majority of the country is. And so I think over the years, that's sort of progressively getting worse. The corruption's getting worse, the crime's getting worse. And I personally don't feel safe in South Africa. I worry about my family. And as much as it's a beautiful place to live in, I think we're all realizing that, you know, like I said, with the passports, we have better opportunities and you know, maybe a better quality of life moving over this side.
So now that we know a little bit about you, I think the one thing that I've been looking forward to is the fact that you're currently in Greece. Mm-hmm. So obviously this year has been so crazy, especially in the UK. They've had over 300,000 coronavirus cases and over 300,000 coronavirus cases. And right now there are a lot of countries going through a second wave, Greece included. Like since the start of August, coronavirus cases in Greece went from under 100 a day to roughly over 200 cases a day now. Yeah. So the first thing I wanted to start with was, what made you decide that you wanted to travel during the pandemic?
The question I get asked pretty much on a daily basis. I think, if I'm honest, in London, things were terrible. But there was never, the government never really took a very strict approach. So we were in lockdown, but we were allowed out the house once a day. That was never monitored. So there were days where I would go for a walk in the morning. I would go get my groceries in the evening. And if I felt like an evening walk, I would go for an evening walk. Things were never really that strict. So I don't think anybody in London ever felt that we were under these like serious lockdown restrictions. The fear was definitely there. So everything I did was driven by fear rather than by government control. And I think because of that, there was definitely an element of, amongst most people, that we were still going to get our European summer. And I think that's been made quite clear by, I mean, I go on Instagram, you know, every day, and I can tell you now that people in London are all traveling. My colleagues are traveling. My friends are traveling. I think majority of the Greek South African friends that I have all either been to Cyprus or Greece or are still here at the moment. So there was never really, you know, I speak to people in America and it's like, oh no, I'm not going anywhere this year because they can't. South Africa is the same. Australia is the same. So I think unless you were extremely high risk or if you were, you know, extremely fearful, you were going to try and travel. So having said that, we were definitely one of the first. I think we left on the 1st of July. So it was very early on. We didn't really know many people that were traveling at the time, but we kind of saw the opportunity of, so my boyfriend and I and a couple friend of ours were all working remotely. And we sort of got together and discussed, you know, surely we can do this in the summer. As you, I'm sure you know, you've probably heard London hasn't got the best reputation of summer. So we kind of thought, you know, how can we take advantage of this remote opportunity, but also still be safe? So at the time we were quite scared. I think I was particularly nervous about traveling, you know, making sure I had all the information on how to keep safe. But we did. We left. Well, funnily enough, our flight actually got cancelled because Greece extended the restriction on the UK. So at the time, we actually weren't allowed to fly directly from the UK to London, to Greece. But I had phoned the embassy and found out that you could fly indirectly. So if you flew through another country, Greece would let you in, which I found quite bizarre. So we took a chance. We literally, you know, after finding out our flights were cancelled on Friday afternoon, we booked a flight on Sunday that was going to fly through Copenhagen. So we flew through Copenhagen, probably one of the most stressful experiences, I would say. I've never been more germ conscious and sort of COVID freaked out. I think that was definitely a scary day, but also was made comforted by the fact that there weren't that many people in the airports. Airports were taking extreme measures to make sure that you were safe. And, you know, you weren't allowed anywhere without a mask on. We not only had masks, but we had those screens on. We wore long sleeve clothing and made sure all our skin was covered up. We sort of had a million and one hand wipes. So we wiped down the entire seat when we got into the plane. And then on our arrival in Greece, we did the full procedure. So my mother's a doctor, so she kind of explained, you know, how to go about it when you arrive. So when we arrived, we literally took all our clothes off, put them straight into the wash, disinfected ourselves before touching anything. So there was quite a process that followed, I think, because we were all a bit scared. What I found really interesting was we were told we were going to get tested at the airport in Greece, especially because our origin was United Kingdom. And when we got to the airport, it looked like they had been testing throughout the day, but they were sort of closing up. We arrived quite late and we walked past the testing station and, you know, we were all quite keen to get tested. I think all of us wanted to make sure we were safe to be in Greece. And we sort of got directed away from the testing station to go collect our bags. So we were all, I think we were all quite shocked. I think we were quite, I personally was quite disappointed. I thought, you know, I think we've all been hearing how well Greece has been handling this. And I don't doubt that they have. I think I just wish that they had tested us that day because the whole plane, majority of the people that were flying with us from Copenhagen had been on our flight from the UK. So we weren't tested. And I think those first few days were quite stressful. We were all a bit worried that, you know, what if we're carriers? We didn't really want to walk around too much and go to restaurants too much. But at the same time, everything was very normal here. They hadn't fully opened up borders until about the 15th of July. So we were sort of the first, you know, tourists to have arrived. So a lot of people, because we were speaking Greek, nobody really knew that we were tourists. So we would try and make that quite clear. We wanted people to know to be careful. We didn't want them to think it, you know, they could relax. And I think in typical Greek style, you know, the masks weren't worn properly at restaurants. They would sort of have them around their neck and be quite relaxed. So we would say, you know, we've just traveled from the UK. Please, can you put your mask on? Just so that we were, you know, making sure that we did everything we could to, if we were carriers, to prevent spreading it. So the first few days were quite stressful. And I think a lot of people were quite confused by the fact that we had left. But then within about 2 weeks, when everything opened up, it became the norm. Everybody started flocking to Spain, to Portugal, to Greece, you know, the sort of classic Zakynthos, Marbella, all the sort of Ibiza, all the typical sort of, you know, the locations that the Brits like to go to all started becoming quite busy. So I definitely think it was sort of the norm that once borders opened up, people were going to travel. And I guess we were sort of just the first ones. And I must say that the first few days that we got here, I think my Instagram DM just blew up. I was also running the Nisosa Greek Island Tour Instagram page, and I think I had over 200 DMs asking me questions. So it was very clear that we were sort of the people that were being watched and seeing how we did. You know, are they going to get the virus? Are they going to get stopped at airports? And if they're not, then we can travel.
Do you have those questions?
I do have a few. Yes.
Would you be able to tell us what sort of things people were asking? I think that'd be quite interesting to see what.
Read you a few. Just going through my inbox. So The first sort of few questions were, I'll read you the first one that I actually got the day we traveled. Hi, I'm not sure if you are aware, but please let us know if Greece will be testing. We are looking to travel through repatriation flights. If I'm not mistaken, I think she's from America. We are looking to travel through repatriation flights, but we want to know if Greece is testing at the borders. I would say that that question came up at least 50 times. I think a lot of people were curious about the testing. But then what became very obvious, and I'll read you this one. Hi, I've heard that Greece is testing at the borders and that you have to then self-isolate until receiving your results. Do you know if once you have been tested, you are allowed to go to your final destination, that being an island, or do you have to remain in Athens until you get your results? So that question came up quite a lot because I think Athens wasn't quite clear. Well, Greece itself wasn't quite clear about where you needed to be to self-isolate. They had said that you needed to be tested and then you needed to wait for your results. So you needed to self-isolate until your results. But it didn't say whether, you know, in our case, we flew to Athens and the next day we had a flight to an island. So we were sort of confused by, okay, so are we allowed to get on the flight to the island as that's our final destination without knowing our results yet? So that was also a huge sort of feature in my inbox.
Does that mean you still didn't know the answer because you didn't even get tested?
I didn't, exactly. So it was kind of frustrating because I was like, I'm sorry, I don't actually know how to help you. And I was hoping to sort of be a source of information. I wanted to sort of give answers. So it was frustrating. And then I think the sort of maybe about a few weeks into our trip, I started getting DMs. I'll read you this one saying, hi, is it really busy on the islands? Do you feel safe and comfortable? If we come to Greece, will we feel like we could be getting COVID due to crowds and being in restaurants? So I think then it became less about the logistics and actually about the fear. People wanted to know, you know, if I go into a restaurant, are they being safe? Are there lots of people? Do you feel safe? Are you going to restaurants? And that kind of became the next sort of, you know, phase of questions. It's been interesting. And I think a lot of people are curious, I think, you know, based on the DMs that I'm getting.
Yeah, well, you've obviously been to Greece a few times. What has this experience been like compared to others? Is it busy? I know now you were saying now more people are going out. Do you see crowds or no?
So in the first few weeks, especially because borders hadn't fully opened, it was honestly like we were living on a remote island that no one had ever heard of. We were the only people. We would go to famous tourist spots and be the only ones on the beach. We were the only one in restaurants that weren't local. So I would definitely say for the first 2 or 3 weeks, it was a surreal experience. I think on the one hand, we felt extremely blessed to be experiencing some of the most beautiful spots on our own. I mean, I have pictures of myself on one of the most famous beaches in Kefalonia, completely alone. And, you know, I've been to Kefalonia twice before this. About the last time I went was 4 years ago. And I have a picture on that beach where you can't even put your towel down. So it was quite an experience. And like I said, we felt really blessed to be, you know, experiencing such beautiful places completely by ourselves. But in that time, speaking to, you know, restaurants, owners, speaking to locals, speaking to the car hire companies that we were using, everybody was truly devastated. You know, there was definitely an element of fear. So on the one hand, they would say, you know, we are really scared about tourists arriving because realistically, they'd been living in bliss, right? The islands had no cases. They did go into lockdown. But coming out of lockdown, there was no fear of going out or being around people because there was not a single case on the island. So there was never a chance of contracting the virus. Whereas now with tourists coming in, of course, that all changes. So on the one hand, you would hear, you know, they would be discussing how their life is going to change. They've got to live in fear. They've got to protect themselves. They've got to worry about if I'm a waiter in a restaurant, I go home to live with my papu and yaya, how's that going to affect them? So there was definitely a fear amongst the locals, but there was a true devastation of what this has done for the economy. And I think what was made very clear is that, you know, the Greek summer season starts in May. People start arriving from May all the way through to, I would say, end of September. And we were mid-July and nothing had happened yet. So their summer season got shifted, I would say, almost to August. And then you basically left with 2 months. And for any business and for any local, you know, restaurant and even car hire companies, boat rental companies, you know, all the sort of tourism on these islands was really hit very badly. And I think bad enough that they, you know, they really wanted tourists to come, even if that fear was sort of present, you know, on the more busy ports, on the more sort of touristy spots, there's definitely control being put in place. But the minute we went to, so this was quite an interesting example. We went to Ithaki, which is 20 minutes away from Kefalonia, very small island. They had no COVID cases, even up until I think about a week ago. And there you could see that things were quite relaxed. And of course, being on a small island, I don't think we saw a police car once. So there's no fear of being caught. So they would wear masks, but then they would get frustrated while they were talking to you and trying to take your order. So they would take their mask off and put it around their neck. They were told, the whole of Greece has been told that you can't have indoor gatherings. Everything has to be closed by 12 o'clock. And I think for, you know, as a Greek person, you would know that that's impossible in Greece. Restaurants only start getting busy at 10 o'clock. Clubs only open at 1-2 in the morning. So I think that's definitely hit the sort of nightlife and the you know, hospitality industry in that sense. I've noticed a lot of places are shifting their hours. So for example, there's a club in Athens that, you know, usually every year I would probably be there 2-3 times on my holiday. They've shifted their events to start at 6 o'clock and end at 12 o'clock. So, you know, that's why I'm saying I don't think that, you know, the restriction is there to ban people from being in, you know, in a clubbing environment. So having moved it from 6 o'clock to 12 o'clock, you can't tell me there's a difference having it from 12 till 5 a.m., you know. I think less people might go if it's earlier, but they're still trying to find their way around it. So, yeah, but it is devastating to see the effects on the country and on, you know, going to restaurants that I know for a fact in previous years are packed, I would say are maybe at a tenth of capacity. And that could also be due to how many people they're allowed. You know, beach bars have been told they're only allowed 40% capacity. So it is quite devastating to see how quiet the season is, which it also makes sense, right? You don't have any of your Americans, you don't have any of your South Africans, and you don't have your Australians. You also don't have any of the Asians. So places like, you know, Santorini, for example, I actually traveled to Monemvasia, which is a sort of coastal village in Peloponnesos. And when we got there, we were chatting to one of the waiters who said to us, you know, what's so crazy is that we don't have Chinese and Americans. And I thought about it. And I think having been in a place like Santorini, those make up majority of the tourists. You know, those are places that people go to photograph, people go to see as a tourist. You don't go there as a sort of Greek wanting to enjoy the Greek lifestyle. And they were quiet. Monemvasia was very quiet. So yeah, I think it's been an interesting year for the country, for sure.
And then the last question, did you ever get the wooden spoon growing up? And if so, what was the worst thing that you did as a child? Were you a little brat?
I think some people would be quite shocked to hear that I wasn't. I think I was actually quite an angel when I was younger, if I may say so myself. No, I never got the wooden spoon. I think my mom was very sort of, I don't know what the word is to describe it, but she was one of those parents that didn't believe in hitting or, you know, kind of any sort of punishment in that form. So I didn't. But I did have cousins who got the wooden spoon, and I don't even think they would cook with that spoon, knowing what it had done to them. It was like an instrument of torture, and I was even scared of this item that had never even touched me. So no, I can't say I experienced it myself, but I was definitely well aware of how lucky I was that I didn't.
I definitely got the wooden spoon growing up. I was a little... I was a terror child, though. If I didn't get what I wanted, I would make a scene. My parents own a fish and chip shop, which is very great. And next door, my uncle owned like the whole lot of where the fish and chip shop was. So next door, they had a servo that they owned. And then next door, my other cousin's family had like a convenience store. So it was like our own little village in the shopping center.
Okay.
I reckon I was probably 5 years old. This is only one of my stories. But I reckon I was 5 years old, and my cousin Christy, who lived next door to us, still does, but I just don't live there anymore.
Okay.
She was working at this service station, and I was like wanting some sort of lolly, and she wouldn't give it to me. So then it had a line of like six customers in the shop, and I'm like, I'm going to teach her a lesson. So what I do is I grab the whole rack of the lollies and I throw it all down.
Oh, and there's my gosh.
A line of customers in the shop. And then I see her fuming. So I run out, I leave, and I go back into the fish and chip shop, and I go to mum, yeah, Christy kicked me out. And then I go back into the shop with mum, and mum's like, meanwhile, Chris, I waited long enough where Christy had cleaned it all up, right? The mess that I had made. I waited long enough, and I go back, and mum's like, Christy, why you not let Andrea back into the shop? And then Christy's like, no, I don't want him in the shop, and telling her why. And then she's like, mum's like next to me, and mum's like, he's very sorry. Well, I'm like grinning with mum next to me. Didn't say no to mum and let me back in the shop. And as soon as like mum walks away, Christy's like, you're not touching anything. You're not talking. Anyway, I was that sort of child. Anyway, so thank you so much for chatting to us.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Greeks of the Globe is now a fortnightly podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on your favorite place you get your podcast from. We are also now on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Follow us at Greeks of the Globe.